This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan on to talk about Voyager. On this episode, though, I have a very special guest who is not, in fact, a literal Star Trek fan, and that is my very good friend, Kathy Campbell. Kathy and I were hosts of SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast here on the Incomparable Network, and I have cajoled her into being a guest on Voyager Revisited. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. There was a distinct lack of Tatiana Maslany in this show. I'm very disappointed.
I know. It's quite different, huh, from Orphan Black.
So very different.
Yes. But I'm so glad that you could come on and talk about this show with me because we have, I feel, a very good on podcast relationship about talking about shows, and it was a great joy to me to have you on early on this new podcast as I get this launched and figured out.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm glad that I get to podcast with you again.
Well, before we get started, why don't you tell the listeners who may not have listened to SestraCast, 51 episodes, they might be Star Trek people, what a little bit about yourself, Kathy.
Yeah, so I am a human. I don't know.
Yes. Let's get your species right first, because Star Trek.
we'll put that out there. I am a podcaster and a unicorn and photographer, and I love to help businesses get their stuff together. And I also love talking to people all over the world on podcasts about a variety of different things. No longer get to talk to Jean about Orphan Black, but there's 51 episodes of that, so that's enjoyable. I enjoy talking to my friend Alex Cox about all sorts of things in life. She is a robot and I am a unicorn, and we talk about everything that life can throw at us and how, even though we are very, very different people, we have a connection through our friendship that makes it pretty interesting. And then I also like to talk to a ton of random podcasters. So I bring two podcasters together and we talk about podcasts. We talk about how they started listening to podcasts, how they started doing podcasts, and then we talk about their favorite podcasts, because that's something that I love is how much podcasters tend to love podcasts. Even if they only listen to one or two, everyone can think of a favorite podcast.
Yeah.
So that is also on the Incomparable Network and is called Friends in Your Ears.
Podcasters podcasting about podcasts. I think it's a winning description. So short,
I love it,
but accurate.
Yes.
So on SestraCast, just to let the listeners know, when I was making that with you, I was the one who had watched it at least a couple of times before, whereas you were the one watching for the first time. And so it was a fun format for us, I think, because we did 51 of them. And so if it wasn't fun, then boy, are we a couple of masochists.
Right.
And what I really enjoyed about doing that show that way was getting a fresh perspective on a show that I already felt like I knew inside and out. And so when I discovered that Kathy had not watched any of Star Trek Voyager, first of all, I was like, really? Wow. Because sometimes you forget that not everybody has watched everything that you have watched. And I suggested that we watch it together, watch the pilot together for the show, because I was thinking, here we go. I can hear what Kathy thinks and get a fresh take. And I hadn't watched it in a long time, but of course I had watched it a few times. So that's what we did. We watched the episode known as Caretaker. It's a double episode. It launched the show, Star Trek Voyager, and also launched a whole new network. In fact, somebody on Twitter has been posting ads from TV Guide for Voyager, and it's just really funny to see them. So I've been collecting them, and maybe I'll link to some of those in the show notes. But I mean, that's how I think, you know, it's important to remember this was like brand new for everybody in a lot of ways. So that I'm really looking forward to getting into that a fresh take on that with you, Kathy. But before I dive into that, I just want to, I'm confirming you never watched Voyager. And you have hardly watched any other of the Star Trek series. Is that right?
Correct. I have seen bits and pieces of the original series. At one point, I was like, I'm going to watch all of Star Trek. And I think I made it through the first most of the first season of season one of the original series. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, screw this. I just want Patrick Stewart. And so I tried The Next Generation. And I think I made it through like a season and a half of that before I was just like, nope. You know, it's not that it's not enjoyable. I really, you know, I love the whole idea of Star Trek and I love most of the characters and I really enjoy like plot lines and stuff, but I just got bogged down by how much there was.
Yes.
And I just couldn't. So recently, in the past couple years, I've seen two episodes, both for Random Trek and both for The Next Generation. So feel free to listen to those episodes.
I thought they were,
it was, you know, very enjoyable. And so I can come to Star Trek where I can enjoy the whole premise. I can enjoy the idea, but I also like that I can hop in to anything and kind of be okay, if that makes sense. So that's what I loved about like Random Trek is that I don't have to necessarily know the three seasons beforehand.
Right.
Whereas you couldn't do something like that with SesterCast because you would just be completely lost.
No, that would be
or with
a big
Orphan
mess.
Black. Not SesterCast, but yeah.
That would be a big mess to try to watch it in a random order. And sometimes it's a little bit of a mess on Random Trek because there's some story arcs, especially in Deep Space Nine, that just don't make sense if you haven't been watching it, you know, for a whole season or two beforehand. And the other thing I would say about most of these seasons is that the first season is not the best season of any Star Trek, except for the original series had its best season in the first season, and then it sort of petered out. But I have actually gone to the internet to find watching guides sometimes when I want to watch Star Trek, but I don't want to watch something that isn't in the top 10 percentile or whatever.
Oh, yeah. You want to watch a really, really good one.
Yeah. And actually, I created a viewing guide for Voyager for that very reason, too, because I felt people were watching it randomly or, you know, just casually seeing an episode and saying, oh, my God, that show is terrible. But it's not terrible unless you really don't know what's going on or you don't care about the characters.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that people need to take into consideration, that it takes a while to build up a relationship with those characters where you care what happens to them next.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that being a thing, especially for – So when I watched this first episode, the intro felt very Star Wars to me as opposed to Star Trek.
Interesting.
It felt more aggressive almost.
Well, it does. Of course, it has that rolling paragraph.
Right.
It opens with the Star Wars.
Very well be
credits.
Where I was thinking. But also in the credits, it felt very hot. So, and granted, of course, anyone listening to this, you know that I haven't seen a whole lot of it. Mm. So, and in my mind, the Star Trek intro will always be the Next Generation one, where it's very like soothing almost, but because it just felt like all of the fire and it felt very, very hot. So I don't know if it was more like meant to feel more aggressive or if that was just my take
on
it.
That's interesting.
Because, yeah.
I mean, for me, The intro to Star Trek Voyager is my favorite because it's not militaristic sounding. I mean, like this Next Generation has a real march, you know, it's a march. And the Star Trek Voyager is just showing like these beautiful galactic scenes, you know, with the ship coming in and out of them. So it feels very open and space exploration and awe-inspiring. So that's what I mean. I happen to like the tune. You know, I think it's more dramatic than the others, I would say. So whatever, everything is relative. And it also, you know, I've watched it 1 million times now. But it is one of those shows where I often don't bother to try to fast forward through the intro because I like it. Yeah. Whereas I get tired of the Star Trek Next Generation tune, that da 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 da, you know, like feeling like I should march around while I'm listening to it.
Yeah. I can see that.
But yeah, so it is a weird opening though, because it opens with this scene of a ship that is not a big starship, and it doesn't look like a Star Trek crew, a Starfleet crew. And I think, you know, that little scroll at the beginning tells you these are, you know, these freedom fighters or whatever, however you want to classify them, the Maquis, and they are trying to escape from a Cardassian ship, which was, you know, Cardassia is like the big bad species, the one, you know, from Deep Space Nine that has been, you know, kind of like the Nazis of space. So that's, I think that's the only time you see a Cardassian. Well, but everybody's in the Alpha Quadrant at this point. And then that ship disappears, like fades to white. And then it after the credits, really switches to a completely different kind of scene in a penal colony. So.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, we're going there. That's cool. But of course, you know, you see the handsome man and you're like, okay, so he's going to be a character.
Yeah.
He's going to be important-ish. And you hear this voice and it's Captain Janeway. And this was the first like introduction to her. And I was just like, oh, yay.
Yeah. I forgot that Tom Paris is the character who you see first, and I forgot that he's kind of the first person whose story they try to hook you into. And I also forgot for sure how, I mean, he's known as a charmer, you know, and he considers himself, he's like that archetypal fly boy who, you know, is really good as a pilot, but he also thinks he is like a ladies' man. Yeah. And I forgot totally that he kind of tries his lines out on Captain Janeway.
And she's just like, I'm not even going to deal with this.
Not going there. So, and generally in this episode, you know, he is made to be quite, you know, the really sexual harasser on board. And it's not that he doesn't continue to be something like that throughout the series, but it definitely, they tone that way down.
And thank goodness. I felt,
It's just startling how uncomfortable they can make you feel just with a few lines. And they will give him some relationships going forward that are actually quite interesting. And I actually like the character. So that's one of the things, you know, I have to, you know, confess to when people are talking about him. And I'll just say, you know, for the record, I like him. But If I had only watched this, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, and by the end of the pilot, you know, I can see how you could like him. Like I'm starting, mm-hmm. like okay, I can see how his character can arc and change, and I can also kind of see why he is this swarmy charmer, especially because of the history that he's had. Mm-hmm. He almost needs to put up a barrier of his. Like, this is who I am, so nobody can hurt me because I'm going to just try and charm the socks off of everybody mm-hmm. so that nobody really gets to know me as a human, as, you know, a person and see how I can be injured.
Yeah, no, that's true. So that was interesting. You know, as I say, he's one of my favorite characters, to remember how he was introduced and how some of the dialogue really made me squirm. I think maybe, as you say, like they had to set him on this level so he had somewhere to go, even in the pilot. Like he turns out to be like a loyal friend and a brave person who, you know, who does he is a worthwhile person to have on the ship. So what did you think? I mean, so Janeway is collecting, you know, a bunch of people for this new ship, Voyager, which is going to be super fast, 9.97 warp speed capable. And they go to Deep Space Nine to leave from there. I think just so they can have Quark in the beginning. And Quark is a great character on Deep Space Nine. I mean, he can be also kind of annoying, but that kind of like Ferengi making a profit model, he embodies that in this episode. And that's, of course, where Harry Kim, we meet him, and he is the noob. He's definitely... I think he's like the Wesley Crusher of Voyager. He's very smart, but he's not, you know, he's not very mature.
He's fresh from the academy.
Yeah. And
which there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope. So they filled that slot, young guy who is on his first mission. And
gullible.
And that Paris takes him under his wing is like, okay, that could work out poorly for him, or maybe it will work out okay.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is and as the episode went on, I really like their connection. I like their friendship. I like the mentor mentee, but also like Kim comes in as a, hey, let me be your friend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that whole Paris warns him about him because, of course, he needs to set up those barriers before somebody can tear him down. Mm-hmm. And Kim is just like, yeah, I've heard about you. I don't care. I'm still going to be your friend. Nobody can tell me who to be friends with or not and stuff. And that sort of loyalty, I think, really affected Paris, and yes. I like that. I like those kinds of relationships in any sort of media that I, you know, entrust myself to experience.
Yes, I agree. And like this, I mean, this is going to be a crew that really has to bond because none of them can transfer to another starship. So what did you think of their, you know, the crucial moment where they go from, hey, we're chasing somebody in the Alpha Quadrant to, as Kim says, I think we're 70,000 light years away from where we were.
Yeah, it definitely adds a level of like a requirement to to get along. Because of the merging of the two ships at the end, and like how basically this episode is really good about setting up the entire premise of, hey, we need to get home, but we're still going to do our job while we get there.
Yeah.
and how important it is that everyone works together, because like you said, they can't just transfer. Like, no. Thankfully the ship is big enough. So the 141 people, I think, plus yeah. the extras, like you can get away from each other.
Yeah. Minus some people, though. So did
yeah,
you...
that's true. So maybe it's exactly 141 for...
I guess when you add the Maquis and subtract the casualties, but...
Yeah, but you got to add Neelix and Kes, too.
Neelix and Kes, yes.
And would they count the holographic doctor?
No, I don't think so.
He may be my favorite character.
Oh, yeah.
He's so... I love a good sassy doctor. I have seen every episode of House multiple times, one of few TV shows I own on DVD, and I love me a sassy doctor, and this is the perfect sassy doctor, especially the running joke, which I'm guessing happens throughout the series, about somebody forgot to turn me off when they leave. Like, why do they always forget that? I thought that was very cute, very... a little bit of levity, which is really fun.
Yeah. Well, he is a lot of people's favorite character. He's certainly in my favorite three. And, I have more than three, but limit it to three, he is definitely my second favorite character after Janeway. And he does have an arc. In fact, of all the characters in Voyager, people will argue he's the only one that actually evolves over time, which is ironic since he is supposed to be a computer program. And they work out, you know, technology for him to be able to participate more as a human than a hologram stuck in the sick bay. But when people argue that he's the only one, I say, well, there's Paris, and Paris comes a long way as well after seven seasons. And, he's super fun.
Is that a complaint that, there isn't a whole lot of like growth in the characters? Okay.
Yes. And I mean, I guess, you know, Star Trek is Star Trek, and they tend to have, you know, If I don't know, I mean, I've watched all of the other series, and I can't say that I would say there's a lot of growth on the part of most of the characters.
Yeah, I would say just from my, you know, internet usage that like Wesley Crusher has a ton of growth, but that's because he's a child.
Yeah.
So like, it's easier to have someone grow from being, you know, mommy's. Latch on here. You're part of the crew because mommy brought you to like a full blown member.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Picard really changes or Riker really changes. No. I don't know. I mean, I love TNG. Like, don't get me wrong, but I think there's another character who isn't introduced in this this season or even the next season. It comes in season three as, Seven of Nine, which you may have heard of her.
I've heard. Yep. I have. That is definitely a conversation that I have heard people have.
Yes. So there's a lot to go around on that. And if I ever manage to lure you into coming back on the podcast, maybe we'll watch a Seven of Nine episode, because she's really interesting. And she's a Borg that they capture basically and keep her on the ship. And
is she the one that has like the silver eye thingy?
Yes, that's her. Jeri Ryan is the actress. And she was also controversial because, you know, she was like eye candy for the boys who didn't want to watch a female captain. And in fact, Kate Mulgrew was not in favor of the switch because they let Kes go, and I know she's really cute.
I like her.
I like Kes too, and she gets better costumes. I was thinking about you when I was looking at the costumes, and I was like, oh, Kathy will like her later season costumes, where she's like kind of like an intergalactic Girl Scout pixie outfits.
Oh, cute.
She's very cute. And she is a really good character, I think. But there's another thing that people don't like about Voyager. One is they don't like Kes because she's quiet and not. But she is very powerful. They don't really, show it so much in this, but that race of people is, they have, what's the word? Paranormal, abilities. So they can communicate telepathically and do other things with their minds. But people really hate that she and Neelix are a couple. And I don't love Neelix anyway, but I don't have a problem with that. They're like, she's only two, right? But I'm like, but she only lives to be nine. Like, what do you?
Right.
She's mature enough for having a relationship.
For consent.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's able to consent. Like, yeah. That's my one concern. Like, you can't say, oh, she's two and apply our humanoid rules to somebody necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So, but
there's all kinds of, sort of murky sexual politics going on.
But would it really be Star Trek if there weren't?
I don't know. I feel like other series are, well, like in the original series, it's only Kirk, going around being the intergalactic Lothario. Whereas, and Picard, is pretty much clean cut, and the rest of the characters, I don't know. I guess they have their occasional things that happen. But anyway, I think there's probably more coupling on Voyager. Maybe because they can't.
Maybe because they can't. Yeah, they can't meet anybody else. So, like, the only way to add a love story in, really.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm sure they're going to pick up other people throughout their travels occasionally.
There, besides Seven of Nine, they don't really gain any new crew members.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, very, because they don't, there's no other humans really out in the, not that they're anti other aliens, but it's not like they run into other Starfleet vessels. That happens once in end of season five or six, and they do end up picking up a few crew members who completely disappear, from the face.
Right.
They get Seven of Nine, and later on there's this teenager Borg teenager that they adopt that makes it through the seventh season with them. And it's another interesting character, but yeah, so this is, they are who they are. Their bridge, stays the same, except, Kes isn't on the bridge. And, what you won't see until the next episode is Torres, the half Klingon gal.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like, she's one of my favorites too.
And I really liked her. I liked how she handled being, when Torres and Kim were escaping and in the thing, and the conversation that they had with each other, I thought was really interesting. And I like that their exposition wasn't too explainy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, we're learning that she's half Klingon, which didn't think it was a thing, but apparently, obviously it could be. So yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting to just kind of build their characters a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like her. She's an engineer. I don't know if that really comes out in the pilot, but in the next episode. So many people have died on Voyager, the doctor, the human doctor,
right.
The pilot, which I was sorry to see her go, though I knew she wasn't going to be on the show. And that woman, I thought she could have been a good character, the original pilot. I didn't care about the first officer or the doctor, really. They just seemed pretty one-dimensional and cranky.
Which is how they're supposed to be, because you're not supposed to necessarily miss them.
Right. And they lose their chief engineer, which I don't know if we ever meet him. There is the Lieutenant Commander Carey who helps Janeway put the warp drive back online.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's not the chief engineer, and in the next episode it will be the first, like, Voyager crew versus Maquis crew who gets the assignments. B'Elanna Torres will win out in engineering, and she's awesome as the chief engineer.
Awesome.
She doesn't break anybody else's noses, which she does break Carrie's nose in episode 2. But yeah, so there's some interesting Klingon storylines to come. And
yeah.
And I mean, the big spoiler is that's who gets together is Torres and Paris. And they couldn't be more opposite.
Yeah.
And they bring so much to each other, you know, where they have to compromise a lot to be a couple. And that, I like that. So that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that a lot, actually.
So there's fun stuff in, you know, with that. Let's see, there was something else I was going to ask you about or some. So one of the things that another, I don't know why I'm making this show about, here's what people don't like, but I'm curious.
Well, because it's good to acknowledge it. So
yeah.
That you can work, not necessarily work through, because you don't have to work through anything, but you can like let people recognize for like your listeners here that you can see what's, like what's wrong with the show, that you can acknowledge and that sort of stuff. Like, it's okay to not like the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's totally okay to not like the show. And really the premise of this podcast is that, you know, it will be fun for people who like the show, but it's also for people who would like to like the show more, but they haven't watched enough or they haven't had competing opinions put to them about what's good about Voyager. So that's what I'm trying to do. So one of the things that is criticized, and I think rightfully so, but now having watched this episode, I think, well, you know, they kind of deal with a lot of it already in the pilot, is that the premise of having these two crews merge could have been a lot more drawn out, like that it feels like they merged too quickly. So I don't know.
I would argue that that's not accurate. Mm-hmm. I feel like I didn't feel like that was rushed. I felt like, well, obviously they're going to merge them, because why would you have, well, first off, the smaller ship gets completely broken and exploded because of everything. So like, that's not a surprise. But also, like, what else are you going to do? Are you going to have them just hang out and not do something? You're in a closed world. You have only these people. So, of course, you want to utilize them, not only so that you have more people to, you know, replace positions that are empty, but also you don't want them bored. Like,
right.
bored people get in trouble. So give them a job.
Yeah.
And you're set.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people would have liked to see more of a Battlestar Galactica style, like conflict always going on, you know, on the ship amongst the crew members. And I think that is one kind of show, but that's not this show.
Well, and I don't know if that would work, because this is a close, like they have no choice but to be together.
Yeah.
And spoiler, Battlestar Galactica, wow, I can't even say it, is also a show that I haven't really seen.
That's okay.
I think I've seen the first two episodes of the new season, or the new version, because there's two different.
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at this. Look at all this information I'm bringing out.
I will say that one of the reasons I have not rewatched this episode is that I really hate the part where they do this holographic hoedown on the array, like that was their choice for it's so stupid looking.
I can kind of see how they, well, why they would do it, because you instantly know that is meant to be Earth.
Right.
Like, there's no, this could be a different civilization, or this could be, like, it's immediately recognizable as this is meant to make you feel comfortable for those humans. And so, I mean, you also immediately recognize it as meant to be a cover.
Yeah.
For whatever bad thing is going to happen. So, like, it's meant to feel off.
Yeah.
It feels, but you still know exactly why they chose it. So I was okay with that as a decision. Not that it matters, because but yeah, that's
no. I think it just, to me, it like put this taste in my mouth that the caretaker was really a buffoon. You know, like that everything about how this powerful being operated. I mean, I'd forgotten, and I just in my mind that became like so much of the show when it really isn't. I also feel like why some 20th century version of Earth in the South when this is the 24th century and Earth is recognizable in other places.
Yeah, but I mean, like they said, they searched whatever their records and whatnot. And so maybe they, who knows what they
Knows what they just hit, the first hit they got in the database. Yeah. And it was, they didn't realize it was the Beverly Hillbillies. And, right. And yeah, I found it actually, as somebody who grew up in the South, a little offensive as well.
Oh yeah, definitely offensive.
So, but anyway, got that out of the way. And that was good for me. Like I said, it was really good for me to rewatch this and not be afraid of it. Like, cause I feel like you can't skip the pilot, and watching it is actually was more fun than I realized. I really enjoyed seeing Janeway's character being presented and the way that they positioned her as the, you know, captain. She's the captain, you know, she's not the lady captain or the, you know, the new female captain.
Ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
that was so great. That section with Kim and Janeway where they're just like, yes, sir. And she's like, oh, gosh, what was it? In the event of a
crunch time.
In crunch time, you can call me ma'am. Otherwise, I go by captain. Like, right. I definitely appreciate Janeway. I appreciate that she had no, like, she is obviously competent. She knows exactly what she's doing. She has the loyalty of her staff. She has all of this, like, power without having to be a bitch or having to sit and, like, be extra smiley and kind to everybody. Yeah. Like, she's a captain the way the captain should be. Like, there's no, none of that is bad. Like, I appreciate her, and I can see why people would, oh my goodness, there's a lady captain, because that's how the world is.
No, but they gave her the worst hairstyle, but.
Oh, yeah, the hairstyle. And the picture on the computer thing of her and her husband and the dog.
Yeah.
Like, could they have made her stand out separately from that, like, group anymore? She's in her uniform.
Yeah,
with
that was
terrible
weird.
Terrible hairstyle in these, like, Olin Mills family portraits. Like, really? Really?
Yeah.
You didn't even put her, because obviously she's going to be wearing her uniform most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's obviously that. Because she's on the ship. So have her in normal clothing for that picture would have been smart to humanize her.
Yeah. No, you're right. That was weird.
Yeah. But I did like how throughout the entire this first episode, they put into place what they would be able to, like, how self-sufficient the ship was.
Mm-hmm.
So we know they can make their own water.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they can obviously make their own food, but we also know, like, the replicator can make clothing. And so all of these things for the, 79 years it would take them to fly back straight, like, they have everything that they need. So they don't necessarily have to worry. I'm sure there will probably be episodes of them worrying about something to replace something, because obviously that's how that works.
Well, Janeway, one of her her well-known traits is she's a coffee addict. And there's an episode where they're running out of whatever crystals that they need to find, and they think they can find them in this one nebula. And she goes like, you know, okay, you know, engage. Or she says, there's coffee in that nebula. So I'm thinking about making myself a coffee cup with that on it. Anyway, well, Kathy, any last thoughts on the episode? It doesn't sound like you are planning to watch any more because you just aren't you have so many other things to watch and Star Trek is not high on your list.
Yeah, that is an accurate statement. Not because I don't enjoy it and I didn't enjoy this, just that there's so many things in the world, so many things.
I know.
And I don't know if I can get obsessed with another thing.
a 25-year-old Star Trek series?
Well, and thankfully, you know, especially with this show coming into play, the podcasts of Star Trek are pretty much covered. So I won't feel the urge to start a Star Trek show. So I think that might be another reason why I'm holding off.
Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on today to talk about the pilot with me and watch it with
me.
Yeah, it was fun. And I know you are a good pal to watch stuff with. That's all I'll say. So people follow Kathy's podcasts, and she has some where she will be watching new shows. So in the future, do you want to say anything about where people can find you here or in the future?
Yeah, you can always find links out to everything that I do at kathycampbell.com, which will have it has links to my businesses, but also the podcast that I do. And we'll definitely have links to a future show that I'm going to be launching at some point when we get more information from the actual show about the Wheel of Time and how we're kind of doing a little Sestracast style in that one of my co-hosts has never read the books. And then another one and myself have both read the Wheel of Time series several times, which if you're not familiar with it, is a high fantasy 14 book epic.
Wow.
Fantasy. And the books are about the size of Game of Thrones, if not larger. And there's 14 of them.
Jeez.
And yes, I've read them all multiple times. Well, and then there's the kind of pseudo prequel. So I guess 15 books. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So the television series is coming out on Amazon. Production is starting this fall. And so we are going to be talking about that from the view of someone that is not familiar with the series, as well as two people that are very familiar. And I'm super excited for that to come out. So say hi to me online. I love chatting with people. And I'm so thankful, Jean, that you invited me on at the beginning of this. And I'm excited to see what your podcast goes.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And thanks, listeners, for being here as well. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. This show is one of the many pop culture podcasts found on the Incomparable Network. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.